Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on national health care when we come back. You know, when people call the law school, they often ask me how they can learn more about the topics that I speak on over the air. Keep in mind that most of these topics that you hear on the radio, I teach in detail in one of my classes here at the law school. For example, when you hear me talking about the common law, it was Alfred the Great who codified the common law back in 872 AD into 49 principles or statutes, of which 22 of those are incorporated into our federal constitution and Bill of Rights. Now, the common law was taken from the Mosaic Law, which was given to Moses at Mount Sinai, and that's recorded in Exodus 19, verse 16 through Exodus 24, verse 8. And it includes negligence, insurance, taxes, things like income, property, and social security taxes. Now, these IRS tax laws are a counterfeit of the tithing laws of the Scripture, and they work a theft on everyone who participates in them. Now, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob gave us a better way of life than income tax and Social Security, and that's the basis of our tax and status quo. We owe this income tax and Social Security tax because we've contracted into it. That means you can contract out of it, can't you? Now, if you'd like to learn more about tax and status, why don't you write for our free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. And best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, and you can download it directly. If you're not online, then you can give us a call at 417-273-4967. Ask for it, and we'll send you one. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, we've been talking about this thing of national health care insurance, also known as socialized medicine, depending upon where you live in the world and what you call it. Here in America, we've got a name. It's called national health care insurance, and the president's out busily selling it as I speak. And there are town hall meetings being set up all over America where the president's men are also going out and trying to sell the health care program. It's kind of falling into disfavor. The American people are now, when they're polling something less than 50% in favor. In fact, I saw a poll out the other day, and they said that about 70% of Americans are satisfied and happy with the healthcare system that we have. The president said, if not now, when? And he says the healthcare system's broken. It needs to be fixed. I think Medicare, Medicaid, and the government's socialization of medicine has failed, and that needs to be fixed. I'm not sure that the rest of it does. I mentioned to you the other day we had a healthcare problem here in our family, and we went out and bought the services at a very competitive rate. When we offered to pay cash, or when we told the doctor we were going to go to India to have the work done, they brought the cost down to within $1,000 of what it would have cost to go to India to have the job done. I'm not complaining about that. It sounded like a pretty good deal to me. Now, last night I was watching the Lair News Hour. Well, it was Friday night. And they had a little segment on there on the healthcare program. And they had a segment on these town hall meetings, and people are getting to be kind of loud and boisterous about it. And one of them said that the president's health care plan introduced euthanasia into our medical system. Now, that's quite a little statement to make. And so the president had to counter that, so they asked him about it, and the president said, there is nothing in the national health care plan that deals with euthanasia. That is a lie. Not with President Obama. I heard him say that. He said that euthanasia provision in this health care program is a lie. Now, I started reporting from Spiker on the Obamacare breakdown for you. So the very first thing I put up here was 118 reasons to reject national health care. So I'm reading from the Spiker publication. If you go to Spiker at spiker.biz, I think you could probably tap into this. The subject matter is Obamacare, broken down for you, hyphen, God help us. I underlined the God help us. You probably won't have to. Again, that subject is Obamacare, broken down for you, God help us, from Spiker. And you go to Spiker at Spiker, S-P-I-K-E-R.biz, and I think you'll probably find that. Now, after the president said there's no provision in this 1,018-page health care bill that provides for euthanasia, I immediately started looking through these 118 provisions, 118 reasons for you to reject it, and I found it right here on page 2, And then in the bill, it starts on page 425, 427, 429, and 430. There's four provisions for euthanasia in here. Now, the president said they're not in here. Now, the president's either mistaken or he's a liar. If the president didn't know they were in here and he said that they weren't, then he's mistaken, as my old granny used to say. I'd say, "No, that guy's a liar." And she'd say, "No, don't you say that now. He's just mistaken." Well, when somebody is mistaken, that's because they made a mistake. Now, I find it hard to believe that President Obama doesn't know about these four provisions on page 425, 427, 429, and 430 of his national health care bill. I will concede 1,018 pages now is a lot of material. But surely somebody on the president's staff must know about these four provisions. Let me read them to you here. On page 425, the government provides approved list of end-of-life resources guiding you in death. That's page 425. Page 427. The government mandates a program that orders end-of-life treatment. The government dictates how your life ends. Page 429. Advanced care planning, consult, will be used to dictate treatment as the patient's health deteriorates. This can include an order for end-of-life plans, an order from the government. Page 430. Government will decide what level of treatment you may have at end-of-life. I will concede that the word euthanasia does not appear in those four provisions on those four pages. But when the government provides approved list of end-of-life resources, that is, here's what we're going to give you and here's what we're going to withhold, and when the government mandates a program that orders end-of-life treatment, and when your government advanced care planning consultants will be used to dictate treatment as patient's health deteriorates, which can include an order for end-of-life plans, and when government can decide what level of treatment you may or may not have at end of life, that sounds like euthanasia to me. I'll leave it up to you to decide what that sounds like to you. Now, I'm not opposed to this national health care program. I'm not writing any letters to anybody, and I'm not encouraging people to vote this way or that way. I'm kind of non-political. And I've decided to opt out. And I don't want any part of it. I don't want to join it. I don't want to unjoin it. I don't want to participate in it. I don't want to pay for it. I just don't want anything to do with it. I want to deal with the American National Health Care Program in the same way that I deal with the Canadian National Health Care Program. I'm not a Canadian. I don't have any need for the Canadian Health Care Program. I'm not seeking it. I'm not trying to abolish the Canadian Health Care Program. I'm not suggesting that you Canadians opt out or opt in or extend it to me or let me come to Canada and participate with you. I don't have anything to do with it one way or the other. Now, as a reporter, I just want to report to you these facts and then let you decide what you want to do. So now, number one, 118 reasons to reject national health care. In the same 1,018 pages, there may be 118 reasons why you should accept it joyously. Jump up and down, scream and yell, and praise Obama for bringing this to you. But I wanted to zero in on the reasons why I don't want it and why I want to stay out of it. And I'll tell you what really bothers me about this is that they want to make it mandatory. Mandatory. That's what bothers me. It's kind of like hate crimes. Or when somebody comes up with a story, and they're called Holocaust deniers. I'm of the opinion that we ought to allow free speech. Now, here in America, we have a clause in our Constitution that provides for free speech. There are some limitations. You can't yell fire in a crowded theater. All right, that's kind of a given. But other than that, if we're not threatening somebody's health, safety, and welfare, we Americans have always had the right to freedom of speech. But there are a lot of Americans out here that don't believe in freedom of speech. And when you don't believe in freedom of speech, those of us that believe in freedom of speech allow those who don't believe in freedom of speech to stand up and exercise their right to freedom of speech and tell all the rest of us that we ought to sit down and shut up. That's the essence of freedom of speech, that the person has a right to espouse positions, beliefs, and philosophies that may be patently false, that the rest of us don't accept, don't want to accept, don't want to participate in. But the essence of freedom of speech is to give the guy an opportunity to tell you what it is that he thinks and why he thinks it. Now, the opposite to that is where the guy says, well, no, you don't have a right to speak on that subject, and so hate crimes comes into play. If I come on the air and I tell you about sodomy, the sodomites just come unhinged, and they say, that guy needs to be silenced because he's criticizing our lifestyle. It's all right for them to criticize my lifestyle, but it's not all right for me to criticize theirs. See, that's what I'm objecting to. It's somehow not fair. Now, with this healthcare program, I'm not opposed to people that want national socialized medicine. My God, the people of Canada wanted it and voted it in. So now I can take a look at it, and I've come to the conclusion that you Canadians up there enacted a wonderful piece of legislation. I looked at it and said, I don't want that. I don't want to participate in it. I don't want to pay for it, and I don't want to buy that. It's kind of like buying an automobile. What if the government came along and said, everybody has to buy a Chevrolet? Wouldn't that bum you out, especially if you wanted to buy a Toyota? So here in America, you know, it's not good for our national economy. It's not good for our country, for our citizens to buy Toyotas. It would be better for us if we bought Chevrolets, Fords, and Plymouths and Chryslers, but we allow freedom of choice. Now, the same thing's true here with this freedom of speech as it relates to national health care insurance. The proponents of it should have a right to go out and just beller and tell their horse about how good this is and how they think we ought to vote for it and how they ought to implement it, and I'm not opposed to them selling it. Now, my conclusion was that I didn't want to buy it. Now, if I don't want to buy it, and they want me to buy it, and they want me to buy into the program, they have every right to try to persuade me, but do they have a right to compel me to perform or to participate? Well, let's put the shoe on the other foot. Let's suppose that those of us that don't want it compelled all of you people who do want it not to participate in it. Wouldn't you be kind of bummed out? Wouldn't you like to be able to choose socialized medicine if that's what you want? So I'm in favor of all those who want socialized medicine line up over here and on the left, and all of us that don't want socialized medicine line up on the right. And you people go out and do whatever the hell you want. I don't care. And I'm not going to prohibit you from doing all those things that you think that are going to bring you happiness and success. Now, would you just be kind enough to let me do the same? Let me make a mistake. Let me fail to join you in your brilliant healthcare program. And then when I get sick, just leave me alone, let me die. And then remind me, you had your chance, Gordon, to join up with this free medical program and you rejected it. Now you're sick, too bad for you, you can just die. Would you just let me do that? Would that be all right with you? Now last time we were down to page 91 where the government mandates linguistic infrastructure for services, translation, illegal aliens. And that's what that's for. Now, I don't know how they do it in France. Maybe in France, if I went over there, they would translate that into English for me, maybe at French taxpayers' expense. But it would seem like to me that if I wanted to move to France and participate in the French economy, participate in the French lifestyle, that it would be incumbent upon me to learn how to speak French. I don't have a problem with that. And I can readily understand you Frenchmen over there saying, if George Gordon wants to come over here and participate in our way of life, he can just learn to speak French like the rest of us or just stay home. Hey, listen, I hear you loud and clear, and I agree with you. You Danes up there, you know, you probably speak a different language. How would you like it if I moved to Denmark, and I don't speak English, so I want you Danes up there to hire an English translator at your expense to translate this for me? Now, if that bothers you in some way, I don't blame you. That kind of bothers me. And the way I figured it is that we Americans have been speaking English now for a long time, and it's our national language. And if you people want to come here from Mexico, God love you, learn how to speak English like the rest of us. And if you don't want to learn how to speak English, then why don't you stay home? See how simple that is? Because I don't want to spend a lot of money translating this for you. That's just my selfish, narrow-minded point of view. And I don't mind telling you that I'm very selfish and narrow-minded. But I don't want to pay for that. Now, I don't believe for a minute that if I move to Mexico, that you people down there in Mexico are going to bring in linguistic scholars or linguists over here, not have to be a scholar necessarily, but somebody that knows Spanish and English, and that you're going to pay for this at your expense. I don't think you're going to let me participate in your Mexican healthcare system without my paying for it. But in this healthcare bill, there's a provision in here that aliens don't have to pay for it. Now, that's also on page 2. It's on page 170 of the health care bill, and it says any non-resident alien is exempt from individual taxes. Americans will pay for them all. So if you come here on a green card, you don't have to pay for this health care system, but we do, and you get the benefit from it. Let me ask you Frenchmen over there, what would you think if we Americans came over there to France, went over there and went to work, and we're competing with you in your marketplace? And I'm over there working, I took a Frenchman's job, and I'm over there working away. And I can participate in your national French healthcare system, but I don't have to pay the national French healthcare taxes. What would you Frenchmen think about that? Well, I just wanted to bring it to your attention that I don't think it's fair for you people around the world to come here to the United States, join up with our economy and take our jobs from our people, and then take our benefits over here and then not pay for them. And I'm just narrow-minded and selfish, and I wanted to tell you about it. So on page 170 of the president's health care bill, you can rest assured that President Obama knows that. Now, why would our president want to put a clause into the law that says that non-resident aliens are exempt from individual taxes? Wouldn't it be just as easy? Any non-resident alien is liable for the taxes to pay for the benefits just like everybody else. See, as an American citizen, if I want those benefits, I have to pay for them. Well, that makes all the sense in the world to me. I've decided that I don't want this national health care program. I don't want to pay for it, and I don't want to participate in it. But if I was participating in it, I think I ought to pay for it, and I'm not opposed to that. But whatever happened to freedom of choice? Whatever happened to the idea that those of us that are objectors to it, those of us that don't want to participate, could opt out? Is that too much to ask? On page 195, officers and employees of government health care bureaucracy will have access to all American financial and personal records. Now, we have a Fourth Amendment that protects us in our person, houses, papers, and effects. Now, once you join up with this national health care program, all of a sudden, officers and employees of our government health care bureaucracy will then have access to all of our American financial and personal records. There's a provision in there for that. Now, as this thing is set up, let's suppose that you're Bill Gates, and you make $1 billion a year. Now, you have to pay the taxes for it, but you can't get the benefits. I don't know that that's right. Why shouldn't Bill Gates be entitled to the benefits if he has to pay the taxes to pay for them? I remember years ago, I was an employee of the Atlantis Manufacturing Company. I happened to be the CEO, but I always wanted to let you know that I didn't take the profits out of the company. I took a salary. I just took $1,000 a month salary, $12,000 a year, and paid all the taxes on them. I had to pay Social Security taxes and income taxes, just like any other employee in the company. Well, we closed the plant down on June 15th, and then we reopened the plant on September 15th. So from June to July, July to August, and August to September, 90 days, we would retool, change our designs and our furniture lines, and come out with our new fall program, new fall models. Kind of like the auto industry, they shut down for a couple of months and retool, and then come out with the 2010 models. So I went down to sign up for unemployment insurance. I paid for it, and I thought, well, for 3 months, I might as well draw my unemployment. So I went down to the job service, and I filled out the application, and I said, okay, now I'm an employee. Here's how much money I make, and here's my Social Security number. And the guy says, well, what's your job there? And I said, well, I'm the president. And he said, are you an officer of the company? I said, yes, I am. He said, well, you can't draw unemployment insurance. You're an officer of the company. I said, well, as an officer, I'm also an employee, and I have to pay these taxes as an employee. He said, that's right. You pay the tax, but you don't draw the benefits. And I said, well, that doesn't seem fair. He says, well, that's the law. I don't know if it's fair or not, but that's the law. So that's one of the reasons that I closed the company. And when I took a look at how government treats people, it's kind of like what we're looking at right now with this economic meltdown. I was reading the International Forecaster the other day. Let me pass this on to you. The big banks, that is Bank of America and J.P. Morgan, Citicorp and Goldman Sachs, they've received a lot of money in these bailout programs. There's a lot of contention as to how much money they've received, but now, the government hasn't paid any of the people who have these mortgages that are going into default and being foreclosed on them. So far as I can tell, last time I saw some numbers, it's down around 8% have had their mortgages refinanced. 8%. Now, I don't know how many million there are, but there's several million houses that have been foreclosed on and that are in threat of being foreclosed on. Well, listen, if you took the amount of money that was given to the banks, and if you'd have taken that money instead and just given it to the people directly who need to make those mortgage payments, you could have paid all those mortgages off, free and clear. I mean, those people wouldn't owe another dime on those houses. All of that money then would have been paid to the banks. Well, then we wouldn't have needed to give the banks any stimulus, because the problem, as I understood it, was that these people had defaulted on their real estate loans and couldn't make their payments, and this then threatened the banks, and they were going to go upside down. So the government said, well, we got to save the banks, and so they went out and they generated $13 trillion and gave it to the banks. It wasn't quite that much, but it was a bunch. Well, now, it seems like to me, if you'd given the same $13 trillion to the people who were upside down on their mortgages, you could have paid off all the mortgages in the United States of America. Hey, listen, there's only about $7 or $8 trillion worth of mortgages out there that need to be paid off. I saw some numbers the other day. Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae hold half the mortgages in the country, which total somewhere in the neighborhood of $10 trillion. Well, then, if you'd have taken the same $13 trillion and just bought those mortgages up, paid off all of the people that hold those mortgages, then those people would own their houses free and clear. We, the taxpayers, would be sitting here, having passed out the money. And the banks would have all been paid, and then there wouldn't have been any any housing crisis, would there? But here's what we did. We took the money and gave it to the banks and never gave any relief to the debtors. Now the debtors still owe the money. The banks won't lend, and furthermore, the banks won't renegotiate the terms of those mortgages. So we still have the same problem $13 trillion later. Now, I'm just a plumber, and I don't deny that I haven't been to college like Tim Gaither and Ben Bernanke and President Obama. But, you know, us plumbers down here, you know, we're not all brain dead. So when we take a look at some of these things, you know, like national health care or this national bailout program over here, and we ask questions like, well, what did you accomplish with it? You spent the $13 trillion and you haven't solved the problem. And well, I'm just asking the question, if you'd taken the same $13 trillion, paid off all the mortgages in America, everybody in America would be sitting in their houses free and clear. And the banks would have all gotten paid. It's true, we would have pissed away the $13 trillion, but we've already done that, and you still have all these mortgages that are in default. Now, which was the better plan? Now, talking about national health care over here, you got a program over here the president says is broken, it needs to be fixed. Have you ever thought about just letting the marketplace take care of it? Just let the marketplace take care of the problem. And the president says, well, 40-some million people in the country, 44, 47 million, don't have national health care insurance. Well, let me stand up, wave my arm. I'm one of those. Little Georgie Gordon doesn't have any health care insurance, and I don't want any. So one of the things that could help a great deal is to let those of us who don't want it, don't need it, can't use it, and are trying to avoid it, let us stand up and say, leave us out of the game, and then it would take several million less, wouldn't it? I don't know how many, but it would take some less. And I don't think that the rest of you people out there in America owe me a health insurance policy. Now, it costs about $1,000 a month for health insurance. That's $12,000 a year. Honest to God, boys and girls, I don't believe the rest of you 300 million Americans owe George Gordon $12,000 a year. I'm not asking it, you to pay it for me. I don't want you to. I want to stay as far away from this as I can get. Would you please keep your $12,000 and leave me alone? Is that too much to ask? But the president's program here is mandatory. Mandatory. And this word mandatory appears in here a number of times, and that's what kind of scares me about this program over here. You know, you people get evangelistic zeal, and then you want all of us to participate in it. It's kind of like Roman Catholicism. You know, those people got so excited back in the Middle Ages about Roman Catholicism, they couldn't tolerate Protestants, and so they burned them up in barns so that they could save their souls from hell. Well, if any of you Catholics out there get evangelistic zeal and you're trying to save me, just leave me alone, would you? I don't need your salvation. Don't want it. Would you just leave me alone and let me go to hell all by myself? Then you can rub your hands in glee while you're standing around in heaven and say, that Gordon got what he deserved. He went to hell. He was a bad man. He wasn't a Catholic. He was one of them damn Protestants. I wish you Catholics would do that for me. If you would, I'd be much obliged. And for the rest of you religious zealots out there that want to get me involved in this national health care program, I just ask you, butt out, leave me alone, and let me go to hell by myself, would you? Now, I'm at the halfway point here, and I've got to remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, not state schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, go to the appropriate page, and then download that free general law CD package. That's the introductory CD package. You can download it. Remember, it's free. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or the publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. And if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the national health care program being presented now by the current administration. It's President Obama. And I said I thought Mr. Obama was a liar. Now, that isn't unusual. The scripture says, let God be true, though every man be found a liar. So if Mr. Obama's lying about this, won't be the first time, probably won't be the last. But the president came out and said that there aren't any provisions in this plan here for euthanasia, so I thought, well, let me bring that to your attention, page 425, 427, 429, 430 of the plan, and then tell you why I think Mr. Obama's lying to us. And that's because Mr. Obama's outselling this. This is his health care plan. He's a very smart man. Now, I went in one time to take a reading dynamic course. It was by Evelyn Woods. This is 30, 40 years ago now. But this lady said, you can learn how to read, and you can learn how to read real fast if you take my school. Now, it was $1,200. Now, let me tell you, $1,200 back in 1965 was a god-awful bunch of money. And I was willing to pay this lady $1,200 if she could teach me how to read. So I went in, took the reading test over there, and they evaluated me and said, you might as well go home, son. You know, you're so damn dumb, we don't think we can teach you how to read. Now, I read 235 words a minute. That's what they tested me at, 235 words a minute. And they said, you're so damn slow, we don't think we can help you. Now, my wife at that time took that same test, and I know she was 300 and some words and something like that. She wasn't seeking any help in reading, and so they said, well, we can help you. Pay us $1,200, and we'll show you how to read 2,000 words a minute. Hell, if they could have just helped me another 100 or 200, hell, if I could have read as fast as my wife, I wouldn't have been there to start with. So I don't deny that I'm kind of a slow reader, and I've been that way all my life. Now, I read everything. I read everything I get my hands on. And I usually start from the back of the book. And I always read the last chapter first. Well, not quite. I always try to read the introduction and the preface. That kind of tells me what the book is about. And when I get through with those two, if that doesn't sound good, I don't waste my time reading the book. But if I like it, then I go to the last chapter and I read the answer. And then I go to the index, and then I take a look at key chapters in the book so that I can read those key chapters in the book that go along with the last chapter in the book so that I can find out what this book is all about. I read the page numbers, and I read all the footnotes, and I read every word, and I read it carefully. Sometimes I stop and underline. When I read a book, my wife, she just comes unhinged. I've got notes in the margins. I underline words. I put brackets around paragraphs. I put notes in the front. I write on the jackets. And she says, I'm defacing the book, and I'm just tearing it up. Well, hell, and it's just like this thing here, the spiker thing that I'm telling you about. I've got marks, and I got a four-page report here, and I've got marks all over this thing. I've got crosses. I've got lines. I've got brackets. I've got yellow, you know. Sometimes I use more than one color so that when I go to make a report, I can tell you what's important in here and what isn't. But, you know, I don't deny that I'm a slow reader. But now, President Obama has been to college. He came from Harvard. See, I'm a crummy plumber, never went to college. Read 235 words a minute. I haven't read this whole health care bill. I didn't read the whole Patriot Act. I didn't read the Homeland Security Act. But I don't feel bad about it because the Congress, none of the members of Congress read those bills either. And I think that it's important for people that you hire and send to Washington that they at least read this stuff before they vote on it, don't you? Just ask yourself, you know, you're paying this guy $100,000 a year to represent you. You gave him your power of attorney, and he's out there representing your political interests. You declared yourself to be politically incompetent and unable to manage your political affairs, and so you hired this guy and sent him there with your power of attorney. And it would seem like to me that we should expect that the guy at least read this thing. Now, if your senator or representative has read this and this euthanasia provision in here, should he vote for this provision on page 425, 27, 29, and 30 with your power of attorney, knowing that this is going to affect you? And that when you're sick and you're lying on your deathbed over there, that some guy in the bureaucracy over here is going to decide whether or not we're going to pull the plug on the life support system over here. Frankly, I would like to have that decision. You know, I'm an old man now, but I hope to get a little older. I'd like to get a lot older. I'd like to get 30 years older than I am right now, if I possibly could. And between now and 30 years, I might get sick. And I might need an artificial hip, or I might need an eye surgery, or I might need penicillin or something. And I would like to have the power, the freedom to determine what kind of medical care I'm going to get and how much of it. I'd just like to be able to do that without you or anybody else butting in. And so far, I've been able to do that, and I'd like to continue to do that. Now, this is a direct threat to me. This is why I don't want to participate in this program. I'll stay as far away from this as I can get. I think I can, and I'm going to try as hard as I can to do that. And at the same time, not get in the way of all of you good people out there that want to vote for this, that you want to participate in. And God love you, man. I want to help you. And I don't want to keep national socialized medicine from you. But I don't want you to impose this national socialized medicine on me. That's where I want to draw the line. And if you leave me out, you don't have to pay all this money out for my end-of-life care. Wouldn't that just be real special? Then conversely, I don't want to pay for this thing either. I don't want to. It's kind of like buying a new car. Say, I don't want to buy a new Ford car, and I don't want to prevent anybody else from buying a new Ford. So if you'll just leave me out of it, that'd be real good. Now, when you get to the point where other people are saying, well, it's okay, but you have to pay for this new Ford whether you take one or not, now, that I don't want to do either. See, I don't want the Ford, and I don't want to pay for it. I'm not narrow-minded and selfish again, but I just want to tell you that that's where I'm at. Now, getting back to the president over here, this guy's been to Harvard. He defeated the Clintons, the most formidable political machine ever created by the mind of man, Bill and Hillary. Defeated him. You've got to be pretty damn smart to do that. He became president of the United States. And I don't begrudge Mr. Obama's intelligence. I don't begrudge him his position. And I concede he's probably a hell of a lot smarter than I am. I don't deny it. That's why I find it hard to believe when he comes on the air on the Lehr News Hour and says there's no provisions for euthanasia in this bill. I say to myself, well, I found 4 pages on Spiker. Spiker's quoting from a young fellow who's a, what was this guy here? Let me get to the front page here. His name is Peter Freckenstein. He's a blogger and former Marine from Phoenix, Arizona. He's been going through the Obamacare bill page by page and highlighting the provisions that he finds there. Freckenstein has struck a raw nerve. His list, originally published as a series of Twitter posts, has gone viral by way of email. Within days, the liberal fascist published his personal information on Twitter as a means to silence him. Freckenstein promises legal action, and it's easy to see why the liberals are tripping over themselves to suppress the information. Freckenstein unearthed. Well, hell, all the guy has done is to have read the bill and then reported, well, on page 22, it mandates audits of all employers that self-insure. Admission, your health care will be rationed. Page 30, a government committee will decide what treatments and benefits you get. And unlike an insurer, there will be no appeals process. It's on page 30 of the bill. Come on. Now, my excuse is I don't read too good, but President Obama over there, are you telling me that he's a slow reader and he hadn't read his own bill that he's out here promoting and selling? Because if the president doesn't know about this euthanasia program, which is on page 427, 429, 430 here, what are they? There's one more. No, on page 2 here. Here we go. 425, 427, 429, 430. Then don't you think he ought not to be promoting that if he didn't know that? So that's why I say I find that hard to believe that the chief executive officer of the United States of America is pushing one of the biggest money spending bills, not the biggest, but one of the biggest money spending bills in the history of our country over here, doesn't know about that one provision. Now, if he doesn't know about it, then he's incompetent. And so I guess maybe the president's incompetent. I don't believe that for a minute. I don't believe President Obama's incompetent. I don't believe that guy's dumb. I don't believe that guy's ignorant. I think he's a liar. I think he knows full well what's in there, and he doesn't want you to know what's in there. So when I picked this up, I said, hell, this will probably make a pretty good story. I think I'll go out here and tell the people of America the story, and let's see what they think of it. Or at least that portion of the people of America that listen to this program. All right, now let's go back here a little bit further here. Let me give you a list of some more little thingies over here. On page 95, the government will pay ACORN, A-C-O-R-N. Now, that's an acronym for the AmeriCorps, to sign up individuals for government-run health care plan. Now, I don't know what this AmeriCorps, I'm going to underline this, and ACORN are. But somewhere in here, we must have come across A-C-O-R-N because it's repeated here in Spiker's report several times. Then there's an AmeriCorps in here, AmeriCorps. I'm not quite sure what that is. I remember President Kennedy came up with, I think it was this AmeriCorps. This is volunteers, young people, to go out and sign people up and show them how to make bricks and build straw houses in Costa Rica and things like that. And anyway, they're gonna send these guys out to sign up individuals for government-run healthcare plan. And I'm not opposed to that. And that's like going out and signing people up, you know, to vote. I don't. I'm not telling you not to vote, but I'm not running out here to vote and to get all excited here about this program or some other political program. But I'm not opposed to these guys doing it. Now, if they want to come out here and sign you up, you people ought to ask the question, do I really want to sign up for this healthcare program? Now, on the other side of the coin, is this thing going to be voluntary like Social Security? Now, Social Security is voluntary. There's no law that requires you to get a Social Security number. And I submit that more than likely there will be no law that requires you to sign up for this healthcare plan either. That's because there's no constitutional provision for national healthcare or Social Security. But they're going to have this proviso. If you're working for General Motors, you'll have to be a participant. And I think the people that work at General Motors ought to have the same right to choose as those of us that don't. And so if you're a union member, I'm sure they're going to have you signed up. I notice here that they're talking about signing up individuals for government-run healthcare plans. So I suspect there is an out for those of us that don't want to participate. But you might not be able to get your driver's license unless you can deliver your national healthcare card. How would you like that? See? Now, they already do that. See, I mean, you go in to get a driver's license, and they say, well, produce your Social Security card. Well, hell, 14 million of us in this country don't have Social Security cards. Now go down and try and get a driver's license. So what they're doing here is they take something like a driver's license, which they tell you is your ticket to prove that you're competent to drive, that your feet reach the pedals and you can see over the steering wheel, maybe even park parallel. But there are 16 things that your driver's license is used for, and only one of those things is a competency exam. The rest of them are all commercial. For instance, your driver's license is your identification card. Your driver's license is your proof of citizenship. Your driver's license is your proof of age. Your driver's license is your ticket to buy alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. Well, listen, your age and your ability to buy alcohol, tobacco, and firearms doesn't have anything to do with the health, safety, and welfare of the public as it relates to your ability to drive a car now, does it? I know you need it as a check cashing device. It's your check cashing card. But I don't want a driver's license for the purposes of cashing checks and buying alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. I just wanted to prove that I can see over the steering wheel. Now, this national health care thing, I think they'll stick this up our hind ends sideways, just like they did Social Security and just like they do driver's licenses. So tuck it away in your heart, and if that's what you want, then sign up, get with the program. On page 102, those eligible for Medicaid will be automatically enrolled, and you have no choice in the matter. And page 124, no company can sue the government for price fixing. No judicial review is permitted against the government monopoly. So put simply, private insurers will be crushed. The American Medical Association sold doctors out. The government will set wages. And on page 145, an employer must automatically enroll employees into the government-run public plan, no alternatives. So if you're a wage earner, you're going to be signed up, like it or not. And that's because your employer will have no choice in the matter. Now, if you'll take a look at Hale versus Hinkle, 201 U.S. 43, on page 75, tells you the answer to the riddle. See, corporations don't have any rights. Corporations don't have any rights. And as a result of that, when government enacts a program, the corporation simply has to comply. Now, you work for the corporation, so that's what gives you the corporate capacity. So government compels you, the employee, to follow along with General Motors because you're now engaged in corporate capacity. Now, those of us that are not employees and not self-employed, see, all of you self-employed people out there, you take it in the shorts also. So you have to be outside of self-employment and employment to stay out of this national health care program. Which isn't impossible. I mean, you know, those of us that aren't self-employed and those of us that are not employed, we can do that. But it's going to take some initiative on your part if you want to stay out. Now, employers must pay health care bills for part-time employees and their families. And so now, see, this is going to strike at the heart of Walmart. Doesn't this just tear you up? See, Walmart hires all these part-time employees, and so the government comes along and says, okay, we're going to fix all of you jerks out there for hiring people part-time. From now on, you got to pay the health care bills for your part-time employees also. I don't know how that's going to affect the marketplace, but you can rest assured that it will. Page 149, any employer with a payroll of $400,000 or more who does not offer the public option pays an 8% tax on the payroll. Well, either that's going to cause turmoil in the marketplace or it's going to cause higher prices. Now, as an employer, in the old days, my payroll was about $500,000 a year. So in that case, I was going to have to pay that 8%, see, if I didn't sign up for the health care program. And the employer is going to look at this and he's going to say, well, do I want to pay the 8% tax or do I want to pay the health care? And he'll come to a conclusion. Then he'll raise his prices and pass it on. And if it's not competitive in the marketplace for whatever reason, well, then they'll force him out of business. Then the employees won't have a job. I mean, that's just where reality is at. Now, this is being proposed now right at the beginning of the Great Depression of the 21st century. If you wanted to destroy the American economy, you could not come up with a better plan. This is the plan, and that's why I suspect that the president and all of the president's men have a different agenda. It doesn't have anything to do with your health or your health care. It has to do with the destruction of the American economy, which then will have a domino effect and destroy all the economies of the world, producing great chaos for which these masters of deception can then come in and say, see, look at this. You need us to fix this for you. Look at this mess. Let's fix this mess with a supranational one-world government headed by the United Nations. And we've got the taxing program called cap and trade. That's the way we're going to finance the United Nations. We're going to tax Americans. And well, it's kind of like having a worldwide income tax called cap and trade. So we're going to use the phony climate crisis You know, the world's heating up, so we got to solve this problem. We got to set the thermostat. God has let us down again. God can't control the thermostat, so we're going to appoint Al Gore and our government to control the thermostat. Now, I think that's pretty damn arrogant, number one. I don't know that God has done such a bad job here on planet Earth with the thermostat. And if you ask me, I think we ought to leave it alone. I can't think of anything yet the government has engaged in that's been a benefit to the citizens on planet Earth. Now, I'll concede, all legislation is good legislation. There's no such thing as a bad law. All legislation is good for somebody. The Federal Reserve Act of 1913 was a good piece of legislation for banks and banking and finance and government. I don't deny it. It's worked marvelously for those people. They've made a lot of money. I don't know that it's good for plumbers, carpenters, or electricians, or that it's done anything for the average Joe Sixpack out here. The income tax was great legislation. I don't deny it. For somebody, for government, the Congress, bureaucracy, big government. I'm not sure that it did very much for Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife. And this National Healthcare Plan is a wonderful piece of legislation. All 1,018 pages of it has something in there. It isn't in there accidentally. Every piece that's in there is there for a reason, and a good reason. But does that make that a good reason for you? See, I don't know. I'll leave it up to you. You decide. The report you're looking for is from Spiker. It's called The Obamacare Broken Down for You. God help us. Spiker is located on the internet. And then you go to Spiker at spiker.biz. Simple enough. Spiker at spiker.biz. It's a four-page report, and mine's dated 8/1/2009. Four-page report. 118 reasons why the National Healthcare Plan is bad for you. All right, kids, I'm out of time. I'm going to have to give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by pre-arrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and The Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. Gonna leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.